The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. So today, I cannot resist the opportunity to talk about renunciation, because I love to talk about renunciation. And we know the story, because if we didn't know it before, we heard it during the offertory. It explained very clearly what happened to the Buddha, how he was living in a palace and wasn't good, you know, wasn't satisfactory. So he thought, let's see what's outside. Goes outside and sees, you know, an old person, a sick person, a dead person, and then a renunciate, because in India, then as now, there are lots of people who wander seeking for the truth. So he thought, old age, sickness and death, there has to be something better than this. And he wanted to find out what it was. So he left his family, his wife and baby son, and went to train himself, realize enlightenment, and left it all to us, as it were. So, renunciation, the thought of renunciation can seem a bit chilling. It sounds like giving up everything we like in some kind of cold, grey way. Oh, you know, all the nicenesses of life, they're all bad somehow, and we have to give them all up and go and live in a cave or under a tree in the rain. Or we might think, oh, renunciation, lovely, lovely, I can get rid of everything, get rid of my cell phone, my computer, all the things that ail me, and run off and live in a cave on pine needles or under a tree in the rain and be happy. But actually, it's neither of these things. It's more like relinquishment of things that create suffering for ourselves and other beings. Leaving something behind, we're not getting rid of something. The Buddha didn't get rid of his family. He loved his family, but he just had to do something different. Leaving something behind, leaving home life behind, is how Reverend Hubert translated renunciation for monks. We leave home life behind because we want something else, not because there's anything wrong with home life. For some of us, we just think, I need to do it differently. This is not working for me. But for everybody, actually, relinquishment is our practice. Whether we're monks, lay people, old, young, new to training, or having trained for many, many years, it's the same practice, fundamentally, is relinquishing that which causes suffering for ourselves and other beings. It's not, you know, giving up all the nicenesses because they're bad. It's not rejection. It's just leaving things behind that we no longer need. It's a positive thing, not a negative thing. Well, the first thing is to see that in fact there is suffering, that we do suffer, that we do create suffering for ourselves and other beings. And sometimes it's translated as dukkha, unsatisfactoriness rather than suffering, because life isn't all hell. Sometimes it feels like it. But actually, we do have our moments of joy, reasonable peace, contentment. Things are okay a lot of the time. It's not like we just stumble from one miserable pit to the next. Now and then it's like that, but not always. So you don't say this, life is hell and then you die. You know, it's more positive than that. But life is not all it's cracked up to be when it comes down to it. The three characteristics, this was what tends to bring us to Buddhism. We see that things are not completely satisfying, or something happens. Anicca, dukkha, anatta, the three characteristics. Anicca is impermanence. This is one of the fundamental teachings of Buddhism. It's one of what they call the marks of existence, the three characteristics of all things, is that they're impermanent, not completely satisfactory, and they have no permanent self. Nothing lasts forever. Everything changes. Everything comes and goes. We change, we come and go, and then eventually we die. Our bodies change, our circumstances change, our relationships change, our jobs change. Everything changes. Nothing stays the same forever. There's nothing that we can hold on to and say, this is it, this is my happiness, this is the thing that will make me happy forever and ever, because it passes. Dukkha, unsatisfactoriness. Because things change all the time, life is not actually satisfactory, because there's always something going on. We get what we really want, and then it's not as nice as we thought, or we get used to it and it's me, you know, it's fine. We want something else. Or we don't get what we want and we're miserable. It's not terribly satisfactory, because there's always that sense of unease that underlies our daily life, actually. There's the not getting what we want and getting what we don't want. And there's also that sense of disquiet. There's something wrong with this picture. Life is not just this. Surely there's more than just my getting up in the morning, going to work, and coming home at night, and getting up in the morning, you know. There must be more meaning to my life than what I see. Anatta, no separate self to be found in anything. Everything is interdependent. Everything depends on everything else. There is no thing or being that is a self, independent, unchanging, as it is. Everything relates to other things. A table comes from a tree. There couldn't be a table or a reading stand if there were no tree, or maybe several trees from which it came, and people to make them into this thing here, people to paint it, do what they do with it. All the things we see come about as a result of the efforts of innumerable beings and things. People, you know, we are all dependent on everybody else. None of us could survive for very long. If we were the only person left in the world, it would be pretty dismal and be pretty hard to manage. We all depend on other beings, all of us. Other beings brought us into this world, and we may bring other people into this world. We're all dependent on each other, apparent. No permanent me. This is the real basis of anatta, no separate self. I have no permanent separate me. I can think I'm a me, I can feel like a me, but I'm not the same me I was when I was 12 years old. You know, I remember what that child was like, but it's not really me. All the cells in my body have changed, my mind has changed, my views have changed. Everything is different. And that me is really just my memory of my life. And it's like that for all of us. We really are not an unchanging, fixed me, the center of the universe. And actually, it's a very good thing. It all can sound a bit negative, but it's just as well that none of us is at the center of the universe. It's all just fine. What makes it seem negative that we have, you know, impermanence, suffering, unsatisfactoriness, and no separate self? What makes it seem depressing is our grasping, our wanting to have something real, satisfactory, something that makes us happy, some place we can feel safe, or something that kind of validates us, makes us feel like a better and nicer me than we might feel. Grasping after what we like and avoiding what we don't like. I like this, I don't like that, I like this person, I can't stand that person. You know, we talk about this, I talk about this all the time. Because this is what creates suffering, desire and aversion, wanting this and not wanting that, clinging and fear or avoidance. That's what is the source of all our suffering. The way to the ultimate is not hard. Simply avoid picking and choosing, he says. It sounds so simple. Oh, just avoid picking and choosing. I can do that. Then we come to lunch and we see, oh, it's not what I wanted. I want that over there. Or somebody else takes the last piece of cake or something. And we know, you know, how much of desire and aversion we may have. Because it's so rooted in us, liking this, not liking that, wanting this, not wanting that, fear, worry, anxiety. Because if we want and we don't want, then we're afraid of not getting what we want, we're afraid of getting what we don't want, or losing what we like and all that. And having seen that, yes, there is suffering, yes, it's not satisfactory, and yes, we do create a lot of this, or most of it, then we can see we can do something. We can work on our mind, we can do something about it. We're not just helpless victims of fate. We can see how we create that suffering for ourselves and for other beings. How we make it worse. You know? Bad things do happen to us. We do get sick. We die. Our loved ones die. We lose our job. You know, we lose all our money or whatever. These things happen. But we can not make them worse by trying to cling on to the things we love. If we cling on to the things we want to keep and they're slipping away inexorably, we make it worse for ourselves. And if we try to avoid the things we don't, you know, want, we just can't stand the thought of that, we make it worse for ourselves. If we resist the inevitable change, we don't want to get old, I will not do it, I don't want to get sick, I don't want to lose what I have, I just want to keep it all the way it is, you know. It's a horrible suffering. If we can accept the things that come our way, if we can accept change, easy to say, hard to do, if we can let go of the things that are being pulled away anyway, it does help. We suffer a whole lot less. Acceptance and letting go. Letting everything come and go. Just as in meditation, thoughts arise, abide, and pass away. Let them come in, don't hold on to them, don't push them away, let them go. Just let them come in and out. It's like that with everything. The simple meditation practice is actually the practice of our life. Just letting everything come and go. Yes, we have to do things. We have to make changes. Sometimes we have to stand up and say something or do something. It's not like we're just helpless little leaves floating in a stream. But we can make it a whole lot easier when we can accept what comes our way, and then maybe we have more perspective to do something about it when we need to, or to just accept it and bow to it when there's nothing we can do. Or maybe we find that it's not better than we thought, or we learn something from those seeming difficulties. They can help us when we get sick. We learn compassion and kindness and patience with others who are sick. Otherwise, how could we be sympathetic when somebody else is ill if we never get sick? You know, the three poisons of greed, anger, and delusion, wanting, desire, ill will, and ignorance is another way of putting it. Greed or desire, I want this thing or this person, I cannot be happy without them. And if they're taken away, I'm completely wretched, you know. Or if I have them, I'm still suffering because I'm worried they'll be taken away. They don't really make me fundamentally happy. Anger, ill will. You know, I don't like this, I don't like that. Clinging on to this, I hate this kind of situation. Oh, you know. And trying to avoid all the things we don't like is not the answer. Again, it's a suffering because we're trying to make everything nice for ourselves. And that's not the way to deal with suffering. It doesn't work. Ignorance, again, the delusion of a separate me. It's a suffering, because then we're separate from everybody else. There's me over here, and everybody else out there. And they're different from me, because I'm here, the center of everything. And I have to have what I want, and not avoid what I don't want, because it's the most important thing in my life, is to get what I want and not have what I don't want. And it's a misery. Or the fear and worry that comes with protecting myself from the things I don't like or change, or being not in control, or not being respected, being laughed at, the dread of embarrassment, you know. Some people are more afraid of public speaking than they are of nuclear war. I used to be. Now I've had to get over it, you know, mostly. And we have our ideas, our views, our opinions of what the world is like, or what we are like, or how things should be, or how things work, or how people are, or what they're, you know, our ideas of what people are like, our opinions about people, or how things ought to be, how things should be done, how the world should be run. If I ran it, it would be much better, it would all work much more nicely. Idealism is a trap. The way things should be, the way other people should behave. And then the cynicism that can come if our ideals don't pan out, which they almost never do. Nothing is ideal. Everything is imperfect. Nobody is a perfect being just the way we'd like them. This is a suffering, you know. Expectations of what's going to happen or what somebody will do. And then they let us down. They disappoint us. Oh, I invited them to dinner and they didn't invite me back. Maybe they don't like me. Or I gave them something, it didn't give me something. A lot of our relationships can be based on this sort of unspoken give and take, and we feel disappointed if we don't have any reciprocation. And sometimes just, you know, just let it go. Let that relationship go by if it's not good, if it's just not helpful. Our ideas of, yes, who I am, what I like, what sort of person I am, what sort of views I have. You know, I'm this kind of person with these kinds of opinions and this kind of decor in my house and this sort of car and all that sort of stuff. Or what I ought to be like. You know, I should be much better than this. I should be smarter, bigger, nicer, older, younger, better in every possible way. It's a misery. Or our story of our life, our self. This is what's happened to me. These are the things I've done. And this is my story, and I can't let it go. But we can, you know. How other people perceive us. All these things, they're all bits of how we perceive ourselves. This me. And that is really what we're trying to relinquish, is this me. Because when we can relinquish this grip on who and what I am, and or what I ought to be, or how other people are, or how everything is, or my views and opinions and everything, when we can relinquish the grip a little, we become a lot more liquid and a lot less solid and a lot less stuck with unhappiness about the way things are. We can accept better because we're more malleable. We can drool into the cracks much better than trying to stay, you know, solid and fixed and I'm this way and I will not change. We may not want to drool into the cracks, but it may be a little more. I'm not quite sure that's a good analogy, but anyway. To see how we create this idea of a me and to relinquish the grip a little bit, you know, I don't have to have it the way I want it. I don't have to get all bent out of shape and disappointed when people don't do what I'd like them to do. I don't have to live with this view of myself that is either horribly inadequate to what I'd like or, you know, rather puffed up and not actually realistic. And relinquishment or renunciation is letting go of some of this view. In meditation, as I said, you know, we let go. We keep trying to let go of our thoughts as they arise, our views as they come up. Let them come in, let them go. We don't try to sort of say, oh, I mustn't have any thoughts, because that doesn't really work. Thoughts will come in, we let them go right out the other side. They don't bother us. If we cling onto them, which of course we tend to, then we get pulled off. But we just keep trying to come back, to sit still, so that all the things of our minds come and go, without grabbing onto things, without pushing them away. Simple, we say it a million times, and yet it's always something to come back to. It's the fundamental practice that we do, not clinging, non-attachment. It sounds like getting rid of things, but actually it is relinquishing our grip on our suffering when it comes down to it. It's not getting rid of the things we like. It's relinquishing the grip on the things that create suffering. Seeing how suffering arises, seeing how we create it for ourselves, and relinquishing that grip a little. Doesn't mean it all goes away, but it helps. And it's a gradual, constant process. It doesn't look fancy. It's not a one and for all thing. I will now renounce everything. You know, we renounce little moment by moment, just letting go of our little crabby thought about somebody. Oh, look at that, I'm really snarky today. I don't have to worry about that. Or, you know, this person just annoys me, but I can, you know, I can sit still with that. They're doing their best. It's not their fault that I'm irritated. It's me, it's my irritation that I can do something with. It's not them. My problems are not all about somebody else doing something to me or the horrible way life is run. It's my own responsibility, how I respond to the circumstances of life. It's up to me. Things happen, and how I accept them and deal with them is up to me. Letting go of thoughts and meditation, letting go of anger and impatience, letting go of our longing for something that we shouldn't, we can't have, or somebody who is not ours, or letting go of those little circular thoughts we may have, the little record that's got stuck, you know, it keeps playing the same thing over and over and over again, and in our mind, like, you know, I have this problem, I have this problem, I have this problem, or I'm a bad person, I'm a bad person, or I'm an angry person, you know. We can maybe just kick the needle on a little bit and just relinquish that grip a bit. It's moment by moment, that's what our training is. Moment by moment, whether we're sitting, whether we're doing something, whether we're talking to somebody, whatever it is, making some big decision in our life, just seeing where we cling on to something, seeing where we get upset. When we start getting upset, it's a clue. What am I gripping on to here? Why am I upset about this little thing? You know, suddenly we feel a little bit uneasy. What happened just there? Ah, that's what it is. Something came up that worried me, or I didn't like it. And so what's going on? Just to look, you know. And usually it's something we don't actually have to worry about. It's just our little mind that wants something else. It's to stop feeding our angry thoughts or our desires or whatever. Doesn't mean, again, that we sit in a grey cave. It's just to see where we grip onto something, where we really, really want something, or we really, really don't want something, or we have these little stories we tell ourselves, to see where we grip, to just relinquish that grip a little. The willingness to let go, the willingness to change, to accept conditions as they are, to allow ourselves to bend, and not keep trying to make conditions or other people bend to us, but that we may bend. Doesn't mean we don't do anything, but we're more flexible than we might think. The relinquishing of clinging to our ideas of who and what we are, clinging to the separate me. To turn the heart away from me and what I want as the center of my life, and turn our heart towards the great matter, that which is bigger than all of us, of which we're all a part. That's really what we're trying to do. because none of us is this little separate me, isolated from everything else. We are all just a little tiny part of this bigger thing, whatever we like to call it. Buddha nature, the unseen, the great Dharmakaya, whatever you want to call it, the eternal. We're not a special being. We're not the center of the universe. We're not a specially good or bad person. We're just like everybody else, pretty much. And we're just a little bit of everything. And with that weakening of this little wall of who I am, we can reach out to other beings and extend ourselves to them and practice kindness and generosity and selflessness. It's not a negating of me. It's a realizing that this is not, it's not all about me. I'm not the center of everything. I'm just this little being trying to do my best. And so is everybody else. We're all just little beings trying to do our best. We do not have to be afraid of each other. We can practice kindness and compassion, wisdom. To find this true wisdom in the midst of our everyday life, all the ups and downs, all the things that happen, all the things that come in and out. To sit in the midst of all that, to trust that it holds us up, that that constant fluctuating change is in fact that very Buddha nature that of which we are a part. It's not separate. All these little things of our life are part of that great matter. It's not something different. Our doing our washing up, fixing the car, having a phone call with somebody, making lunch, all these things, it's all just part of that great thing. Nothing separate. None of it is separate, whether it's welcome or unwelcome, whether it's today or 20 years from now, or whether we are involved with a lot of other people or on our own. All these things of our lives, it's all part of that great matter for which we train. And that's what it's all about, that we relinquish our constant focus on me and what I want or what I don't want. And it's not being a doormat, oh, I'll just, you know, I'm not important, everybody else is important. It's not that. It's just seeing our true place in things. I'm just a part of it all. I'm not different, I'm not special, I'm not unusually bad, good, or anything. I'm just part of everybody else. It all sounds quite mundane, and it is, and yet it is really profound, because that we are part of Buddha nature is something that is really fundamental and mysterious. But if we live our life as though we knew we were just part of Buddha nature, it makes a huge difference, because we don't have to be constantly worried about everything. We don't have to be afraid of life or afraid of death. No matter what comes our way, it's just the way it is. And we just do our best with it. And that's what faith is. And that's our talk for the day. Thank you.